Okay, well, thank you, Marty, Mark. So I'm going to take a little bit bigger picture approach to this question. Mark and I have been thinking about these fundamental changes and this issue for, I guess it's been a couple of years now, and it's my take to take a step back and consider really what are the objectives and responsibilities of soil taxonomy. What are we trying to accomplish with soil taxonomy? And is our soil taxonomic system accomplishing that? So basically, that's the overview of my talk and what I'm going to try to accomplish here, at least in a broad sense, to ask that question of what are the objectives and responsibilities for our system of soil classification? How is soil taxonomy doing at meeting these objectives and responsibilities? And what fundamental changes could be made such that soil taxonomy would improve upon meeting these objectives and responsibilities? Now, soil taxonomy has what I'm going to say is three named objectives. There's actually only two, but if you'll allow me to include the title as a third objective, a basic system for making and interpreting a soil survey, that is the subtitle, and I think it's fair to call that an objective of the system. And I think it's a very important objective. And it's not an objective of all soil classification systems. The WRB, for example, doesn't have that as a rooted objective. I think that's one of the great benefits of soil taxonomy is it does keep this as an objective. But actually, in the 1999 edition, there are only two stated objectives. One is understanding of relationships between soils and the factors responsible for their character. And two, to provide a means of communication for the discipline of soil science. Now, these objectives have evolved. Until the 1999 edition, there was no mention of these other objectives. Up until then, soil taxonomy was just purely about making soil surveys. In the 1999 edition, they mentioned that it's evolved to become a means of communication. I think that's a little bit inaccurate. I don't think the system itself evolved. I think what evolved was a recognition that it's the only soil classification system we have. Therefore, it's going to be our means of communication in terms of soil classification. So we're going to put it in the book and say that's one of our objectives, right? So that's what I'm going to start with, is to critique this idea of providing a means of communication for the discipline of soil science. That sounds pretty good. As far as I know, it's never been explained in further detail, though, in particular, from and to whom. Who are we really trying to communicate to? Is it for pedologists? Is it for all soil scientists? Is it supposed to go beyond soil scientists to other fields of science and engineering? Is it even supposed to go beyond that to farmers, education, general public? Of course, in reality, I think most of us recognize that with some exceptions, and I'm generalizing here, but for the most part, in terms of people that are really using soil taxonomy as a means of communication, it's really just pedologists at this point. And that includes people in the soil survey division. And again, there's exceptions, but I think most of us recognize that it's pretty limited to just pedology at this point. So, what about the other soil scientists? And this is something we hear all the time. If those of you that were present at last year's SSSA-wide plenary session heard all three speakers, the pedologists in the room were probably really happy that Pedro Sanchez, Ratan Lal, and Peter Groffman all spoke decrying the lack of use of soil taxonomy by non-pedologists and saying how important it was that these other groups used taxonomic information in order to achieve the symposium was about food and fiber security. I think we all agreed with them. But the reality is that there's some limitations of soil taxonomy that are preventing the use by these other groups of soil taxonomy, and I think that's one of the big things that Mark and I and some of the other speakers here are trying to address is why these other groups aren't using soil taxonomy. It's not entirely their fault, right? We can't just keep on saying you need to start doing this. We need to make some of these fundamental changes. Mark spoke about decreasing complexity. I think that's right at the top of the list. I'm not going to go into more detail on that. A few issues that I will speak about. One is harmonizing meanings across the hierarchy, allowing for redundancy, and including non-pedological properties. So starting with harmonizing meanings across the hierarchy, my first fundamental change that I'm going to suggest. So in the seventh approximation, it states very clearly that to prioritize the idea that when you have, say, an aquept versus an aquent versus an aquad, don't worry about the definitions being the same. Prioritize that you can differentiate taxa. That's really what to put the emphasis on. And back in 1960, I'm sure, and if your only focus is on making a system of soul survey, that probably seemed like a good idea. But what we've created is a system of tremendous complexity, where particularly people that are outside of our system and don't have a complete understanding of our system go in and try to read it and don't have this harmonization of meaning, so they can't necessarily follow it, because you can't just look at the word and know what it means. You have to go and read these very complicated definitions to try to tease out what the meanings of the words are. So what I'm suggesting is an alternative to have harmonized definitions wherever possible, except in specific cases where so doing would prevent adequate taxa differentiation. I think that would be a fairly dramatic difference, would still allow us to have different definitions where need be, but I think that would be the exception rather than the rule. Another one is allowing for redundant information. This is an easy one. It's low-hanging fruit. I don't think it would cause us any problems, but it would be a dramatic change from what we're currently doing. Right now, redundancy is excluded for most classifications. So, for example, you can't have a smectitic superactive soil, because we all know that if you're smectitic, you're superactive, right? Well, a lot of people don't know that, because they don't know what smectite is, and they don't know what superactive is, because they either, and they're in my class and they just learned what smectite is 2 weeks, or they don't know what superactive is as a family, a cation exchange activity class. And by having both of those pieces of information there, it would really help them to learn that. And you know, they might know one or the other, and I guess we're trying to save ink here. I'm not sure why all these redundancies are removed from soil taxonomy. So to me, this is among the easiest things we could do, is just put all the redundancy back in, and maybe we'll find it a little boring, but I think it would help a lot of people. There's another one, siliceous quartzy sediments. Yes, we know that already. The people that don't know what siliceous is or quartzy would really appreciate that information, and I think it would be educational to them. All right, this one is more, this is a much higher level of change, would be including more non-pedological properties. So again, going back to the seventh approximation, the properties selected should be those that either affect soil genesis or result from soil genesis. And looking at that first objective in soil taxonomy, understanding of relationships between soils and the factors responsible for their character, it took me a couple readings of that to realize that factors responsible for their character, that is pointing at pedological properties. It's not just saying soil properties. A lot of this, what I'm talking about today, comes from teaching my students. My class, I always start my soil taxonomy section of my class by just asking students what soil classification should be about, and they list all of soil science. Not just pedology, that soil classification system should span soil science. And when I tell them that, well, actually, no, it's really just pedological properties, frankly, they find that pretty mystifying as to why that should be. Now, I think there are good reasons why pedology should be the core of our taxonomic system, but I think maybe we've gone a little too far to limit taxonomy to just pedological properties for the most part. So if you'll just kind of envision what the world would be like for a second if non-pedologists were to consider soil taxonomy part of their careers, and they sought to capture their advancing knowledge within soil taxonomy. So just as one example I thought of, maybe not a good one, but just an example, what if all the work that's been done over the past decades by people in nutrient management and soil fertility area on phosphorus absorption, what if those groups said, okay, we have enough information now to make a phosphorus absorption family class. Let's add it to soil taxonomy. That could be quite an accomplishment. We could do that in soil taxonomy. That shouldn't be too hard. And then those groups would be adding something to soil taxonomy such that they would be taking some stake in soil taxonomy, and then they could go to soil taxonomy and actually extract some information that's very important to them And maybe they would also go to the point where they would care about what a Tipikapu Dolph is as well, if they were having that relationship. Right now, with just pedological properties, it's hard for someone in the soil fertility nutrient management world to necessarily see the importance. I think we know that there is an importance, but it's harder to do it when it's not as direct. Okay, other scientists and engineers, this is kind of a more challenging problem to get these groups, but I think it also speaks to the broader problem that Mark was talking about of the words you said, the low profile that we have of soil science. These groups are doing soil science and research and characterizing soils for the most part without soil taxonomy. They're really using their own systems of classification for soil science. When they talk about soil taxonomy, often it's, frankly, it's disparaging, at least partly because of the complexity of soil taxonomy. I think that many of the same changes that we're talking about would also potentially encourage these groups to utilize soil taxonomy. Again, decreasing the complexity, and on the same light is to including properties that's relevant to these audiences. What's the key information that an ecologist or someone that has an AGU background or a surface geologist and all these groups wants from taxonomy? Can we incorporate that into our taxonomic system such that these groups see the need to use taxonomy, and then in so doing, they can start saying, okay, I want to know what a haplostart is because I'm getting this other information. And then all of a sudden they're saying, oh, wait a second, what's a vertisol? And then they can key into this vast information of pedological information that they are currently unaware of. Also, I'm going to talk about dynamic properties here. I could do it with really any of these other groups. But in first edition of soil taxonomy, it's quite explicit that the differentiate should keep an undisturbed soil and its cultivated or otherwise man-made equivalents in the same taxon. And consequently, the diagnostic horizons and features should be below these depths. So we have a philosophical system that excludes dynamic soil properties. And really, for the most part, I mean, there's epipedons, but for the most part, excludes the surface. And again, I think that made sense when the goal here was to make a soil map that was going to be relatively static over time. It was, I think, a good decision in 1975, but in 2014, now that we've got a soil map, maybe there is room to incorporate some dynamic soil properties into soil taxonomy. And in so doing, I mean, there's a lot of excitement and advancement in the dynamic soil properties, and bring a lot of excitement, and we really revitalize soil taxonomy by including dynamic soil properties. Okay, what about the non-soil scientists? This one's a little more tricky. In some ways, you can make an argument that maybe soil taxonomy is just too technical for these audiences. But at the same time, you know, these groups use biological classification systems. Well, why shouldn't they use, on some level, soil taxonomic classification systems? You know, my students make a case that they would have been fascinated in high school if they'd even learned that such a classification system exists. Just the concept that soils can be classified and that they vary enough would have been very interesting to them. These groups, they do have a great interest and a need for basic information, well, simple information about basic properties. So a frequent suggestion that's raised is the idea of coming up with common names for soils. And surface properties. So I want to talk about this one a little bit, about adding the surface back into soil taxonomy. So Marty didn't go quite this far back, but you know, Milton Whitney, way back when, was mapping soils. You know, he had the soil series, Hagerstown, and then he did a soil type with a silt loam, which was the surface. And we had that system in place up until soil taxonomy, where you could do a classification that had the surface texture, right? And then we replaced it with the family, which is this vast amount of information. Tells you nothing about the surface texture. And we've got the soil series. Again, vast amount of information. Pretty vague about what the surface texture is. You can go to a soil map and get the surface phase. But soil survey is not a system of soil classification. It's a soil map. So when you're talking to a really anybody, but you know, talking to a gardener or a agronomist or a ecologist, and we have this incredible vast amount of information, but we don't have any information about the texture of the topsoil and our classification system, it kind of makes you think that maybe we've gotten a little overcomplicated on things and missed some very basic information. So again, this would be a pretty substantial change, but it seems to me like some basic information about the topsoil properties ought to be somewhere in our classification system. Okay, do I have a little time left here? All right, right on schedule. So a few comments about the soil series, my personal favorite component of soil taxonomy. I don't think there's going to be too many speakers. I know, Mickey, I think you're going to talk about it a little bit. But a few comments about soil series is that they are the lowest level of soil taxonomy, but they are applied very differently. And a lot of the detailed quantitative information that's associated with the family level is not really associated with the soil series level. In reality, soil series are less constrained by the complexity of soil taxonomy because the rules are often bent in application of soil series for soil survey. One example is we have a classic Hagerstown soil series in my part of the world, in Maryland, the Northeast. It's a well-drained limestone residual soils. Interestingly, about half of the Hagerstown pedons are paleoudolphs instead of what they're supposed to be is hapoudolphs. Well, that's a complete violation of our hierarchical system, but that's how it works. We basically ignore things like that when we do soil series. Here's another example. We're doing a surrogo disaggregation project right now. You can come see my students poster later this afternoon about it. And we were working with local soil scientists to pick a perfect series that fit the definition of a soil. We had the right family particle size, the right drainage class, the right organic matter content. We were told, okay, yes, this morphological description is the perfect, use this as the training set for the soil. Well, it turns out it's an altisol. It's mapped, our soils had a cambic horizon. I said, oh, don't worry about that. It's true, right? So, anyway, I don't have time to talk more about that. I'd love to talk more, but I think there's more to say, but there is a benefit in that as well, is that one of the biggest concerns we have about making fundamental changes is that we're going to throw this big monkey wrench into soil survey. I think the reality is that you can make fundamental changes to the family level of soil taxonomy, and as long as you don't muck up how soil series are actually applied, you're not necessarily going to mess up soil survey. Okay, so conclusions and closing thoughts. What are our objectives for soil classification system? You've gotten a sense of some of my sense for what the objectives are. But I really do believe that we want to step back as a discipline, as a group. Certainly shouldn't just be my opinion. We're going to have this working group because we need to figure out where we want to go if we're going to get there with soil taxonomy. There are a lot of low-hanging fruit with significant potential, but there are more substantive changes that may be needed to meet our broader challenges in terms of where our soil science is going, in terms of our programs, departmental programs, soil survey division, the funding agencies. And reality is that the changes that we're discussing, there's an opportunity here to revitalize soil taxonomy and to make soil taxonomy a part of the development of soil science. And if it's not done, then the reality is that soil taxonomy is probably going to be fairly marginalized. I mean, right now, soil taxonomy is not considered part of the cutting edge of what's really driving soil science forward. But I think there's the potential to do that. And I think in a lot of other fields, the taxonomic system is what's exciting about those disciplines. And there's an opportunity for that to be true in soil science as well. All right.